Occult Lives with D. Eliot. Take the understanding of the East and the knowledge of the West, and then seek. G.I. Gurdjieff. Hello and welcome to the show, where we look at various figures in occult history. This episode will be about a man of mystery, a man who came to awaken the world population and soon discovered most people prefer to be asleep. George Ivanovich Gurdjieff was born in Komru, now named Alexandropol, which was either Russian or Turkish, depending on what side of 1877 Gurdjieff was born. His actual birth date is long lost. He usually celebrated it in January. Gurdjieff was always vague about dates, places and details of his early life. He was born sometime in the 1870s. His Greek father was the rock in his life, who showed him how to live a good existence from an early age. His father was a very much respected man in the area, singing old folk songs and telling tales of old. George also had other tutors as he grew up. These he mentions in the books by himself. He wrote four in total, but they came later in his life. His mother was Armenian and she stayed with him until her death in 1924. His early years as a man, he travelled in search of sacred places, mainly in the East, in search of lost knowledge and secret brotherhoods. He found both, including a pre-sand map of Egypt. He had gone in search of the Sarmong Brotherhood, a secret order presumed long lost. Gurdjieff tracked them down and spent some time with them, where he learnt of the ancient wisdom of yogis, fakirs and monks, dances for the mind and body, and with all this knowledge, he began to put together his own teachings. It is not known when he left the masters he had met, but as any good student does, he left them and moved back to the Russian areas. He had a charismatic quality about him, and it was said he had psychic abilities. Everybody who met him described him differently. It was as if he wore a separate mask for each person, thus not letting anyone know the real Gurdjieff. It was during these travels that Gurdjieff got caught up in the various warring factors that were occurring in the lands he was visiting. In 1896, he'd been hit by a stray bullet whilst in Crete, and then shot again in 1902 by another stray bullet. This time he only just survived. In 1904, he was shot again by a third stray bullet, which resulted in another injury. He met his wife in 1914. She was the Countess Ostrowska of the Russian court, and they remained together until her death in 1925. In 1917, Gurdjieff was in Petersburg, where he set up a small school, mainly of esoteric dance. He was also capable of many other various trades, hypnotist, carpet seller, and mender of anything. He was the all-round handyman. And he had written a dance called The Struggle of the Magicians, a tale of good versus evil, light versus dark. A dark magician and a magician of light battle it out. Music was very important in Gurdjieff's life. In his travels with esoteric brother and sisterhoods, he had been shown the power of music, how it can affect everything by its tones and the way it is played. He was shown a seed planted in a pot and music was played. As the music progressed, the seed began to grow, so that within a short time it became a seedling, flourishing into a full-grown plant, all along with the music playing. Music was one of the keys to life. It was all to do with the vibrations of the notes of the music, along with the vibrations within one's own body. Gurdjieff used this in his school. Dance and music together, properly performed, helps the mind and body to attune. Gurdjieff taught sacred dances, exercises for the mind, body and soul. Good music energizes, harmonizes, bad music distorts and wilts. It was during this time that he was sought out by a Russian man, also on the same path, P.D. Ouspensky. The two had met and become closely entwined in each other's work. Ouspensky had already published some of his own writings, The Strange Life of Ivan Ossakin, a fiction tale on time travel, and another, Talks with the Devil, two tales on encounters with evil and the devil. Both men wanted to evolve, to stop being machines, to stop doing things automatically, but instead with real feeling and attention. They both wanted to become better men, both believing that man does not use his senses correctly, and was so out of touch, out of kilter with the world around him, and thus not perfect, not harmonised. Gurdjieff taught each man how to reconnect with his true self. Uspensky wanted to do it, find that true self. Gurdjieff offered a way, sometimes known as the fourth way. He believed the answers were already within one, and he had the help to bring that forth. Gurdjieff knew that the majority of people would be too lazy or greedy to want to better themselves. He called this the sickness of the 20th century. Gurdjieff also talked about a law of three, a law that operated throughout the universe. A part of that law is that men and women have three centres within them that operate throughout their life on Earth. An emotional centre, an intellectual, and a moving centre. Emotions drive us along. Intellect and intelligence helps us to think our way through the day, whilst our moving centre, the physical side, puts us in motion. These three ways are unbalanced in men and women, working irrationally and thus causing disorder. Gurdjieff was explaining that most of humanity was using these three ways to attempt to get to enlightenment. The way of the fakir, the way of the yogi, and the way of the monk. None of them was successful because they were not bringing all three ways together. They were only working on one centre. A fourth way was needed to bring all three centres in harmony. Gurdjieff's mission was to help man unite himself inside, his inner self in total synchronisation, so that one could then work with the outer life in a more productive way. To Gurdjieff, everybody was asleep in life, like a machine, just rolling through it yet not actually living it. As humans, we have intelligence, emotions, and the ability to move about in our environment, yet we seem to use these ways haphazardly, thinking when we should be feeling and vice versa, moving constantly and never resting, or lazing around and doing nothing, learning routines in a robotic manner to make life as comfortable as possible. But because we are so unbalanced, we live in badly organised communities, caught up in a rat race, where there are mass wastes of food on one side of the world, whilst people starved on the other, and so on. What Gurdjieff was trying to say and prove was that there is a better way to live in this world, united and in harmony. Peter Uspensky wanted to learn more from Gurdjieff, but something happened between them that changed their friendship forever. Nobody really knows what it was that occurred, but Uspensky was definitely put off George and left him. Neither has ever commented on what the break was about. Gurdjieff continued to teach in Constantinople, now in Istanbul, whilst also making money at one of his many trades, including hypnotists and carpet sellers, to name a couple, but as war came, he moved on. In October 1922, Gurdjieff set up another school and gave it the name the Institute for the Harmonious Development of Man. He finally had a place to settle, a large chateau called the Priory, with large grounds in the village of Fontainebleau, France. Students came from all over the world, but the majority were American and British. Gurdjieff intended to train these people to become a harmonious person within. By day, they did physical work, clearing the grounds and building a steam bath. In the evenings, they would eat, then listen to Gurdjieff talk, and the rest of the time, they practiced the exercises that Gurdjieff gave them, which could be physical or mental. Gurdjieff had a koshar made, a carpeted seating area for him to sit on to talk to the rest of them from. Gurdjieff thought it was important to cleanse oneself, and he had a steam bath built on the grounds. The women would use it first, then the men. During the male session in the bathroom, Gurdjieff insisted on jokes to be said for entertainment. Alcohol flowed at the meals, as Gurdjieff thought getting somebody drunk was a great way to get to see the real person. Gurdjieff also began to teach exercises that were to become known as the movements. Slow and at first glance odd dances, they had positions designed to move the energy of the inner body around and like a meditation to take the mind to another level. These movements were later performed in New York City to quite mixed reviews. Nothing had been seen like it before in the Western world. Back at Fontainebleau, Gurdjieff and his students became known in the press, due to an article in the New Statesman, as the Forest Philosophers. But even the author of the piece states at the end that his article is an inadequate description of the life at the Priory due to his own minimal understanding of Gurdjieff's teaching. Crowley came to visit one summer. Alistair stayed for one of the evening meals that Gurdjieff and everybody from the house attended. It is not clear what happened between the two men, But apparently Gurdjieff was not amused when Crowley went to leave and harsh words were exchanged. What was actually said differs with witnesses' accounts and hearsay. Gurdjieff had big plans for the Priory, which he discusses in his book, The Herald of Coming Good. He was going to perform many experiments and pattern many new inventions, some of which involved sound and magnetism. All was going well until Gurdjieff was involved in a very serious car accident driving back from Paris on the night of the 8th of July 1924. He had had the car checked over that day in Paris and then driven back to Fontainebleau alone. His car hit a tree and he was thrown from it, found later unconscious lying on the ground. He was brought back to the Priory after a short hospital stay and was carried to his room. The doctor said he was lucky to be alive. He had received serious head trauma along with other injuries. As Gurdjieff began to recover, he shut down the institute and dismissed the students, keeping only his closest pupils with him. There are various opinions as to what caused the accident. Gurdjieff liked to drink and he also liked to drive fast. The road he had been on was lined with trees and it was night time. There were suggestions he had crashed the car on purpose to put himself out of action, which would be a shock to his students, and perhaps he hoped it would awaken them. Or had this been an unfortunate cosmic accident on Gurdjieff, a shock to knock him into awakening as to what it was he was doing? Had his tale of the two magicians in his dance, Struggle of the Magicians, become art that imitated life? Had Gurdjieff been attacked by another magician? Gurdjieff was unfit to teach and had to recover from that near-fatal accident. In the same year his mother passed away, and the following year his wife died from cancer, a triple shock in a short time. It was after this time that he began to write again. He published The Herald of Coming Good in 1933, a short piece compared to his other works. It is a biography with philosophy and theological thought, a piece of writing that Gurdjieff later retracted, asking his pupils not to read it and to return copies to him. Why is not clear. But now he was ready for his opus. He wanted to write a set of books under the collective title All and Everything. George was later to say that the car accident had in some way increased his creativity, but to be creative he had to be alone, which is why he had shut the school. He had sent some of the students back to the States to sit at institutes over there. The income from these paid for his rent at the Priory. He began to dictate his first book to the few remaining students, and it was entitled Beelzebub's Tales to his grandson. It is the story of Beelzebub, an angel from another planet, who had been sent to Mars many millennia ago as a punishment for a misdemeanor he had had with the god-type character in the book called His Endlessness. Gurdjieff used many strange words throughout the book. He believed that words in ordinary language now had too many meanings, and this confused people in their communications. So, to tell his story, he decided on new words that were peculiar but with a fixed meaning. Beelzebub's Tales to his Grandson is a dialogue of Beelzebub telling his grandson about his visits to Earth, and thus he explains to him and the reader the meaning and context of each new word. Beelzebub is teaching his grandson about the universe, how it operates, and how other planetary bodies and their inhabitants work harmoniously along together, except us, humans on the planet Earth. We are the spanner in the works, and the book explains why. The book is over 1,200 pages long and is split into three parts. It was dictated by Gurdjieff to his closest students, who then translated it into other languages. As he recovered from the car accident, he started going back to his favourite haunts, cafes in Fontainebleau, where he could continue to dictate or write his books. Chapters from the book were read out at group meetings in France and the USA, long sittings where great attention was needed to try and understand the teaching messages Gurdjieff had put into them. Gurdjieff's second book is his All and Everything series. It's entitled Meetings with Remarkable Men, a biography of his life and travels and the teachers he has sought with his friends who called themselves the Seekers of Truth. The book's tales follow him across continents, meeting various types of people, and how he paid his way with his various trades as a handyman and some slight con tricks, such as capturing sparrows, painting them bright colours, then selling them as canaries. This book was not brought out until after his death, just like his third book, Life is Real, Only Then, When I Am. The title explains his philosophy. Unless one woke up, one was sleepwalking through life. It is suggested that this book was never finished by Gurdjieff. It focuses more on his times in America and the groups he had worked with there. All of Gurdjieff's books are written in his own unique way, which hopefully is not lost in translations. Gurdjieff wrote sentences that became paragraphs in his aim to get his point across. Due to financial difficulties, he had to sell the Priory in 1933 and he moved to Paris, though he also had a few more trips to the USA to establish a foundation there. There was a lot of inner politics and a lot of inner turmoil in the American groups, which wasn't helped by Gurdjieff's coming and going between them and Paris. Others took over the teaching position in these groups, and most of this is recorded in various pupil biographies and Gurdjieff's own last book, Life is Real, Only Then, When I Am. It was not an easy task to undertake, the filling of Gurdjieff's shoes. He spent World War II and his own last years living in Paris. He still used his skills as a handyman to get by and financially feeding students and any other poor people along the way. His last group of students were a set of ladies who became known as the Ladies of the Rope. He gave them a gentler teaching to that he had given at the Priory, and they would meet in cafes in Paris to listen to Gurdjieff talk. Many of his pupils have written about their time with Gurdjieff, which gives some fascinating insights into the man. For example, there are many tales of his power of being able to heal people by touch or just by looking at them. There is also a story G.I. Gurdjieff was actually a false identity for a British spy called Fred Dottle, who happened to take his alter ego a bit too far. Gurdjieff passed away on October the 29th, 1949, in a hospital in France. The MD at his autopsy was stunned he had lived so long, remarking the physical insides of Gurdjieff were rotten and would have already killed a lesser man. Gurdjieff is buried in Fontainebleau with his wife and mother. Two big megalithic stones stand at either end of the grave. Gurdjieff strongly believed that one should accept all religions. It was one of his most important aphorisms. He said he had come to bring humanity a new conception of God, to awaken humanity up so that man and woman could discover who the real God is and what their own role in the universe. Gurdjieff came to teach all and everything. All you have heard has been looked up and researched by myself, but you can find out more on George Ivanovich Gurdjieff in books, the web, talking and libraries. Thank you for listening, and until next time, peace and out.